Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
How are you?
I am doing great. How are you doing?
Very good. Very good. I'd like to welcome to the show my guest for this morning, Dominique from New Mexico. And you can find her on Instagram at Unique Pivot. And I am led to believe that you are a very important person, and you help a lot of women break free from opiates.
Yes, yes, that's my mission. That's definitely my mission right now. Thank you so much for having me on my show. I'm so grateful to the many people that I have met by just putting my story out there. I just put my story out there recently in August. It's something that I knew I always wanted to do. During this time in COVID, I've been blessed enough to work at home. And I just couldn't stay quiet anymore. I couldn't keep it in anymore. God was just tugging at my heart. There were nights when I was doubting myself, like, you know, who's going to want to listen to my story? Why am I important? And the next morning when I got up, and I do daily devotionals every morning. I start my morning with prayer. And I kid you not, that devotional that morning was said, many girls need to hear you. Many women need to hear your voice. And I just knew I couldn't fight it anymore. I'm sorry.
No, I was just gonna say it's a great thing, prayer, because I do that every morning too.
Oh yes.
I get down on my knees and I thank God for waking me and keeping me sober, and then I pray for those who are still sick and suffering.
Yes.
I try and pray for those that, you know, may have, from my perspective, harmed me in the past, or, you know, I may still think, like, resentment wise and it does help, because we're all human and we all make mistakes. So I know I've made plenty. You know, we're all in this together. All of us on Instagram, we're all very important people. I was saying that before, kidding, because of course we're all important. We have a strong network, and it continues through our work, through speaking, which is the 12th step. We're doing a 12th step right now as we speak on this podcast. We're doing a 12th step right now. And anyone who devotes themselves to helping others is something that I really respect the fact that people go out there and they may even start a page, or they may donate their time or their money to a cause. You don't just do it, you live it. You went through it, and now you turn around and you help people, and you do it on social media. So you take those that are sick and suffering that get in contact with you, and you try and help them be the person that they want to be and break away from that opioid addiction. And that there's nothing more respectful than that. You know, it's just sharing love and hope. You know.
Yes, absolutely. And like I mentioned, you know, it was very scary. I actually had to hire a coach and a support system to put my story out there. I was scared as all hell, but it was harder to stay quiet, because by me staying quiet, it just supports the stigma that's attached to addiction. You know, I almost lost my life to this because I was so ashamed. I was so ashamed of people knowing what I was going through because of the stigma attached. And I thank God today for my recovery and for Him giving me the strength and the courage to ask for help, because without that, I wouldn't be here right now. And I have to give back. I have to do my part. I have to.
How much does that impact you?
Gosh, yeah.
Getting to a point where you need help, but you're scared because of this fucking bullshit that society has against people who are addicted. Guess what? Most people I know are addicted to something.
Yes.
You know, and we're doing something about it. Okay, some people might not be addicted to mood altering substances. Could be anything: gambling, spending money on stuff. You know, we all have our issues. Everyone does. You know,
yes.
But there's a difference with alcohol and drug addiction. Because people look at people under the influence as being less than. They don't take into consideration that without that substance in the body, you'd probably be a pretty damn good human being, you know, probably even better than, so people, that it's a judgment thing. It's definitely big in this country, I think, more than other places. I mean, because we're so judgmental and we're so social media driven. But now it's like getting sober and getting your head out of your ass is almost sought after. People are doing it. You know, that's something that if it catches on, even if it's a trend, it could change someone's life forever. That's fine. There's so many other crappy trends that people do, like, you know, on social media with taking certain pictures. You see it every day. It's like, okay, take a picture of me staring away from the camera looking at the sunset. Or, you know, it's always like some trends. I want to see some trends where someone's like, you know what? I had a pretty bad day, but I didn't drink. So I guess I'm doing better.
Yes. And that's why I got off of all social media until recently, because I didn't want to be on social media pretending to be something I wasn't when I could barely get out of bed to brush my teeth, you know, on days I didn't have my pain pills. And it took too much damn energy and effort to be fake and to put on this picture that my life is perfect when I was living a nightmare. It was hell. And, you know, going back to what you said on judgments, you know, take diabetes, for instance, people that struggle with food. And yet we can support them. Hospitals have programs and medicines, and they're not ridiculed. But then you take something like addiction, which I tell people I'll always be in recovery. I look at it like I'm in remission from cancer, because I'll always have to be aware and I'll always have to make choices to keep myself in the place I am today. But because of the stigma and judgment, I almost lost my life. My kids were almost left without a mom because of the judgment of addiction. And it breaks my heart. And if I could just help one person get through this, my pain is not for nothing. And I realize that one person's me, and I'm enough to put myself out there, I'm enough to get to it, because it helps me. Helping people helps me. And I feel so blessed to share my story and to share my voice, because I was looking for me when I was in the dark, and I found out that I had myself all along. And that's how I want to help women. You have to love yourself. Self-love is the number one ingredient to overcoming anything, because if you don't love yourself, you cannot be the best mom, the best wife, the best daughter, the best friend. And I'm just so grateful to my recovery and to be here with you right now talking about this.
I'm glad. I'm very grateful to have you on. You know, your emotions, it's almost like I can't even talk after you're done speaking, because I can feel, you know, sometimes I have people on here and I hear these stories where sometimes, you know, it's a little monotone, but then there's that emotional, you know, someone comes through and speaks emotionally, and it tugs at your heart, because it puts that personal aspect on it when you mention family, and especially when you bring up children. You know, children are very impressionable, and normally sometimes as you get older you lose a loved one, but to lose a parent, especially to that, it has a, you know, long lasting effect, and it's driven in pretty young. It's developmental, you know, more than anything. It's not just losing someone, it's all right, now, you know, God forbid you were to succumb to the disease, it would have been much more devastating for, you know, at a child's age. And I went through, you know, stuff when I was a kid. My parents had separated, but they kept, you know, married, and they got back together later on. So it's nothing, you know, even close to losing a parent. You know, it's like a broken home situation that got fixed. But losing a parent to an addiction, not only is it losing a parent, but there's also the added addiction thing and that stigma that always goes with addiction. And it's very rough for a child to have to go through that, you know, because I know kids who went through it with other people, and it's rough. It adds a lot more to life than they need at that time, you know?
Yeah, addiction's definitely a family disease. You know, my 4 years that I struggled, I got pain pills because of my, I had a condition that was very painful, had surgeries. And then my grandfather, who I was raised with, my maternal grandparents adopted my twin sister and I, he got cancer and he had an endless amount of pain pills and fentanyl patches. And, you know, I was able to just, I started stealing pain pills from him. And it got to the point to where I was needing, my tolerance got so high that I was actually swapping out his pills with allergy medicine because I needed all his pills to feed my, to keep me feeling normal. And I felt so guilty. I didn't want to hurt him, but I was just so desperate to function. And I was so ashamed to get help. And I knew when he was feeling sick, it's because he was withdrawing because he wasn't taking his medicine. He was taking allergy medicines. And that, it broke my heart. And I that's how desperate I was because I loved them so, so much. He passed away in August of 2018. And I'm so grateful that I was in such a strong place in my recovery that I was able to be at his house that last year, because for the first few years, I couldn't go to his house. It was too hard for me with the knowing the pain pills were there, even though they were in a safe, because they eventually put him in a safe. I just couldn't. It was just, that's all I could think about. It consumed my entire life. And I'm so grateful that I got the help I deserved and that I was able to be there with him that Friday before he passed away, 2 days later. And I know that him and my mom, my grandparents, are in heaven right now, and they're so proud of me. Because unfortunately, when my grandma, my mom died, I was in a really bad place, and I couldn't be at their house very often. And that ate me up for a while. I felt very guilty because due to my addiction, I couldn't be there for her like I should have. But I know that she's in heaven smiling on me, and they're so proud of me, and that just gives me so much peace, and I'm so grateful. My grandfather knew what it was like to go without pills, and it was so hard for him to know that I was withdrawing. He wanted to call me mijita. That's a term of endearment for Hispanics. And mijita, I don't know how bad, I just want to give you pills. But he knew that he couldn't, but he felt so much empathy for me because those withdrawal symptoms are horrendous. I know a little bit about your story as well, Steve, so I know you may know what I'm talking about. And
oh, I do. I was a big fan of the pills.
Oh, gosh.
Horrible. I remember just tossing and turning for like 2 days, sweating and just cold and sweating. It's horrible. It's a horrible feeling.
Yes.
You know, your skin's crawling. Oh, I can feel it. Yes. I can still feel it. You know, it's horrible. And I've had some surgeries, and I've taken some of them, but I've taken them the right way, and you know, it's amazing. You don't get the real serious withdrawal or skin crawl or sweating when you take what you're prescribed, but you know, given enough time, you just build up that resistance, and then you drop out the bottom, and it's just, oh man, you got so far to fall.
Yes.
It's horrible. Horrible. I don't even like taking like cold medication or the allergy stuff with the ephedrine in it. You know, I can feel it a little bit, but I try not to pay attention to it. Just I'm a little more awake, but I only take it when I really need it. So I'll get like a 12 pack or a 20 pack. It'll last me like two allergy seasons, you know, like fall and spring. I only take them like once a week, maybe if it gets real bad, if I feel like a sore throat coming on or something. But yeah, other than that, I mean, the only thing I really take now is Aleve and like some stuff to fall asleep from the vitamin shop, like melatonin, like good stuff, you know, herbal.
Right.
But none of the bad stuff.
And that's the hard part, because then when you really need the pain medicine, it doesn't work. I remember when I was trying to get off the pills, I had a four-door Jeep at the time, and I had my hand in the hinge of the back seat, and my son didn't know, so he slammed the door, and my hand crunched. I could still hear the. So my husband rushed me to the ER, and typically 5 milligrams of Percocet should have took off the pain, but my tolerance was still so high.
Oh, yeah.
So it didn't work for me when I needed it. It was just a nightmare. So much nightmares. I'm just so grateful to be where I'm at today. And the thing that drew me to you, and I think we spoke about briefly before today, is physical fitness. I now say that my recovery is more about things I started doing rather than things I stopped doing. Being an active addict, it was a full-time job. My whole days were consumed with counting pills, figuring out ways to go to my grandpa's house to steal them. I sat in the ER 2 times for the same broken toe to get different scripts from different hospitals, hours in the ER. I mean, it was a full-time job, exhausting.
Full doctor shopping, and it takes a lot of energy.
And now I have so much free time, and I've dedicated that to give myself love, self-care, meditation, reading the Bible. I love to work out. I used to work out to look a certain way. You know, I was in the best shape of my life at my darkest moment. People had no idea. When
it's
I first
facade.
Thought, right?
You put up a facade. You put up a, oh, wow, you look great. And then the inside, you're just a wreck. I was a fucking mess for years. I did that for years. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's such, like, talking to you is like a mirror for me.
Oh, God, you know, and we're not alone. And I'm so grateful. I'm sorry that you went through this. I'm so sorry, because I know, but I am to know that we're not alone. I felt so alone. Like, I didn't know where to go. I didn't know where to turn to. I didn't want nobody to know. And I chose to get medically assisted treatment. I went into a clinic, and even though I looked different, very different from those that were there, we were all the same. And I am just so grateful. But again, the stigma attached to these clinics, it's people still judge you. It's horrible.
I got to the point. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I got to the point where I was doing cocaine with my friend that I did it with on a regular basis. And he turns to me and says, I think you have a problem. I think you need to go to rehab. While we're doing it, not like afterwards, like while we're actually doing it, he's staring at me like I'm a monster. And he's under the influence. And I'm right away, I realized, oh my God, I'm getting told from another addict that I'm in really bad shape, and I need to get help from the very person that I run with. That is not something that's normal in, you know, any facet of life. I mean, you need to get serious help. That's serious help. Like, rehab is not just like, oh, you need to go see somebody like a therapist. That's like, yeah, you need to go away for a while, and maybe, you know, the implications are even stop being friends with him for a little while. And that was, I was in a very heightened state. My endorphins were going, and I still felt the impact of what he said. And it was sad, saddening, and humorous at the same time, because of where it was coming from, but the implications were there, you know. It's just an amazing journey that we all go through. I've said it before. We, like you said, you know, how you look on the outside, we build up this fortress of bullshit, and we hide in it, and we just tear ourselves down and just smack our heads against the wall all day long in that little fortress. But you know what? The outside looks great. It looks like a big castle. It's, you know, impenetrable, and no one can get in there. And wow, look at you. You're so prideful, and you're so, you know, and inside you don't respect yourself, you know, and it's harder to respect others. And you wind up acting like quite frankly, like a narcissistic asshole, because addiction is narcissistic at its core. And you know this because of what you went through to get your addiction satisfied.
Yes. Yes. I mean, the master manipulator I was, it was to the point to where I would go to my twin sister's house and she started locking her bedroom door. I mean, that was like a punch in the gut, you know. And to now to be, you know, I don't think you could get closer to anybody than a twin sister. And she always knew. She always knew when I was using. She always knew when I was lying. And to now to go to her house and she leaves her purse out, she leaves her door open. Like, you don't know how much that means to me to gain their trust back. That's like the beauty. And for my kids to tell me how proud they are of me, for my 17-year-old son to say, Mom, you know what? Because I saw what you went through and what you overcame, I know that I could overcome anything. And I'll tell you what, like, there's nothing more better than that, to hear your kids tell you how proud they are of you. And for my husband and my kids, I wasn't sure how they were going to feel about me coming out and sharing my story, because you just never know. There's the stigma, but they were so freaking proud of me. You don't know what that means to me, or I'm sure you do. I mean, you're here too, so obviously you have a great support system, but it's beautiful.
It means a lot. It means a tremendous amount of the respect you get and the trust you get back. It's like the world kind of shuts doors to you because of the person you were, and then when you get better, it slowly opens up. But that door, when it's shut usually pretty quickly and pretty hard. And it's for a reason.
Oh, yeah.
So we can see the devastation we caused. But then when we turn around, we get better. There's that trust. And there's that, let's give it a little time to see how she or he does with their process of, on their journey of recovery. And you know what? That door opens, but it opens real wide. And that world comes right back flooding into you. And that's where the grace comes from, the forgiveness and non-judgmental actions of others and thoughts. And it gets deep inside and makes me a better person. And my perception of things and my perspective of the world is definitely different now than it was. You know, I didn't trust myself or respect myself, and I felt the same towards others. It's funny because it's a mirror image of what you go through.
Now, there was a time where I couldn't even look in the mirror. I was just so ashamed of myself, and I've become my own best friend through this healing. I never thought that I would look back and be grateful for this, because it was a nightmare. It was hell on earth. I would have traded my beautiful home, my car, my looks, everything, just to have been not addicted to pain pills. I would have given anything. And to be here today is just, it's still surreal to me. And I thank you. I thank you for putting a voice out there, for coming out with your story, and for allowing others like myself to come out and share their story to give others hope. It's amazing. The title of your podcast, Shackles in the Attic, that really resonated with me. Shackles of addiction, those shackles of addiction, to wake up every morning and to be free of those shackles of addiction. Oh my God, I could jump up right down, jump up and down right now and sing and praise Jesus, because man, that I feel free.
Yeah. Well, there's no, I tell myself sometimes when I get up in my head alone, I have no business being there, because I am a master at overthinking. And then that just leads me down a dark hole, you know, and I can't do it. So I try and do positive things, and the page is positive. So I'll post something, or I'll get in touch with someone and get them on the show, you know. And the episodes that I have out, they're not that many, but they're very impactful. I have a good core group of people, and there's not a lot of people in recovery that feel comfortable enough to do this. You know, this takes a lot of courage to speak. Even though you're not speaking in front of a crowd, it does take a lot of courage to share your story in any aspect, you know, any number of people, even one-on-one. You know, it's like doing that fifth step. You're admitting what you were, how you felt about yourself, you know, what the wrongs you did, the people you hurt. That's not easy. And that's where the emotion came out when you first started sharing about your kids and your grandfather. And that's not to be mistaken for, you know, something of fiction. That's people don't share stuff like that very often, unless they're in recovery or they're trying to get to a better place. And that's all we're trying to do, is just, you know, it's hard to say I'm going to be better than I was yesterday, but maybe I can think about something a little different that makes my life better, you know.
Right.
Now you grew up, where did you grow up? You came to New Mexico right away, or?
So yes, I was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico. My twin sister and I, we were adopted by my mom's parents. I did not know I was adopted until about, I want to say around second grade. That was very hard to understand. I was very confused. I was so rich with love, but I didn't know how to navigate through that situation, because my grandparents loved me dearly. My mom loved me dearly. She was always in my life. You know, I'd be in a room with my grandma and my mom, and I called them both mom. So I would say mom, and they both would answer, and my stomach would just turn into knots, and I'd want to crawl in under a rock. And I carried the guilt of their choices for 40 years. And now I realize it was never about me. It was about them. And they did the best they could with what they knew, with what the tools they had at the time. And I made it about me. I made it about, oh, my dad didn't want me. My mom, you know, I made it about me, and it was never about me. And now that I'm a mom, I know 100% without a doubt that every decision I made, good, bad, it was all out of love. You know, I had beaten myself up for a long time with mom guilt, could have, would have, should have. And I know now that everything I did was out of love. And I know my parents did the same. So I've been able to forgive the situation, not necessarily forgive them because they didn't do anything wrong. They did the best they could. I just didn't know how to navigate through that. And I think that's why I love the pain pill so much, is because they gave me a peace. When I took that pill for the first time, the peace and the serenity in my mind, I was just, it was magical. I felt like Superwoman. It was like, oh my God, I would dream of mountains of pain pills, dream about them. That's how much they meant to me.
Yeah, because they give you that rush, that warm feeling like everything's going to be okay, but it's just such an escape from reality, because when you come back, it's even worse. Reality's worse for an addict. For me, it was worse when I came back, because it was like time missed. You know, you don't get that time back. When you take pills, you get drunk. That time when you're under the influence, you don't get that back. So normal people can do it and still be in reality. But for me and many others, like yourself, you escape reality. You do it for a different reason. It's not to like make yourself, you know, hey, I can, you know, get a little buzz on them at home. I can have a beer or two, or, you know, even like the painkillers. If you take like one a week, if you got a bad headache, sometimes you enjoy it. Okay, that's fine. But you're not trying to escape reality.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. It became my life. I literally would look at that little pill. I would talk to it. I mean, how do you have total control? How do you have total control of my life? It owned me. That little pill owned me. And I remember, you know, the half-life of oxycodone is so short. Within hours, it wears off. So I remember saying, oh, you know, just, okay, in 2 more hours, I'm going to have to pop another pill or two. I mean, my tolerance got so high. I'm lucky to be here. I was playing with fire. I'm so lucky to be here. God, it wasn't my time, because he knew that my gift was to spread hope. And he knew my gift was to spread a message. Because like you said earlier, speaking in front of people is so difficult, and that is a huge fear of mine. So the fact that I'm even here with you today, it's huge for me. It's huge. I can't tell you the nights I would lose sleep, because when I was in college and have to give a presentation, I literally would have to hand off the paper to my partner, and I would start stuttering, my heart, it was a nightmare. So this recovery has given me not only my sobriety, but it has given me a voice and confidence, and it's been a blessing, a huge blessing to me.
Every day should be looked at that way, from the point that we surrender. You know, I do think every day. I don't live in a perfect pink cloud. Sometimes I get back on it, sometimes I fall off of it, because it's hard to keep that rosy glow all day long, or every day, because life just throws things at you. But I don't have to escape reality to get through it. And for that, I am grateful for every day above ground, because I really don't think that I would be alive today. And some people say that, and who knows? You know, there's people who get hit by drunk drivers, and they die as a result of someone else's addiction or someone else's alcoholism. And they might not even be an alcoholic or a drug addict. They're just a regular person. So you can't really say, or I can't really say, hey, I want to be alive. I could be in complete misery and still be alive, like semi-alive, if you want to call it that, because are you really alive? If you're constantly, you know, escaping reality, then you're not living in reality, and that's not really living. You know, you're just in that little shell again. You're in that prison, that castle, that fortress that you build, you know, to keep away the evil, which isn't really evil, you know. And I got to the point where I started to look around the walls that I built, and I realized that I'm the one who's got the problem. I'm evil, you know. My addiction, I've let my brain completely control everything in my life. And I don't mean my whole brain. I mean that deep, dark part where the addiction, that little demon, lives and controls the rest of the brain. You know, it's like putting someone in charge who doesn't deserve to be in charge, like a child in charge of a company. You know, who knows what's going to happen? It's even worse than that. You know, an angry little bitter demon was in charge of my complete brain. And the only thing that I got that was like a saving grace was I got into this habit of working out because I was so scared to actually talk about anything that I was going through. You know, at least if I looked decent, I guess people wouldn't bother with the inside. You know, they talk about maybe dieting or exercise. But my health looked was a complete facade because I wasn't healthy inside. Yeah, all right, I had muscle on me, but that doesn't mean anything if my organs are failing.
Right.
You know, it's overworking. It's overworking just to put up this false aspect or picture of what you are. And on the inside, I was empty. I couldn't stand myself. I hated myself. I would go like long periods of time without cutting my hair or shaving, you know, stuff like that. And just kind of just like looking like a dirt bag because it takes a lot of energy to put up that false appearance. It's so draining on me mentally and physically. Forget about spiritually. There was no spiritual aspect of my life. I mean, I knew God, but I feared him or her or whatever it is. I feared God. I did not pray. I didn't look up to the sky. I didn't say thank you. I didn't say help me unless I felt like I was having a heart attack, you know, that foxhole prayer. And it became just me living in my own shit and kind of shutting everyone out. I had people that I knew. They didn't know me, though. You know, so how would they respect me if they don't really know me? They respect me for me. The respect would end with a hi and goodbye. You know, maybe not physically, you know, hurt me, but that's about all. Other than that, I didn't really emotionally let anyone in because I couldn't even handle my own emotions because every day I was trying to deaden them.
That breaks my heart. I totally can resonate with what you're saying. And I remember, you know, when I would tell my family, no, I'm fine. I'm not using. And I'm like, what am I doing? I'm just lying to myself. And I was a prisoner in my own head. And through my journey of recovery, I would always tie happiness to a goal. Oh, when I reach this weight, when I form this muscle, when I do the yada yada. And now it's the journey. I mean, I'm happy in every moment. I'm here with you present. I'm fulfilled. My purpose is fulfilled. And never in a million years would I have thought that my addiction would have led to my purpose and my wholehearted happiness. And to sit here today and say that, it's still like an out-of-body experience.
It's amazing. It's amazing watching people get sober. It's amazing when I came in, knowing that I could just stop this immediately.
It is. And I remember saying, you know, God, if I knew this 20 years ago, what would I tell my 20-year-old self? And I'm like, wait a minute, I have a 22-year-old daughter, and now she's pregnant with my granddaughter. And thank you. Yeah, they're my son-in-law's a Marine, so they're stationed out in Oceanside. So I'm so excited. And I cannot imagine, you know, not being here for her, for my granddaughter. And I'm so proud to be an example and to show them that no matter what life throws at you, you fight, you don't be ashamed. You dig deep, you find your strength, and you stand up for what you believe in. And you don't let the outside world define who you are. Because for so many years, I let everybody's thoughts of me define me. Constant worry, constant anxiety. What do people think of me? What if they find out? I allowed the outside world to run my life. And that's exhausting. It's like being a ping pong ball, just constantly, no rest. I was exhausted every single freaking day.
You know, it's great, like you said, what if they find out? Because it changes when you don't have that thought in your head. What are they gonna like? What are people gonna do? What are they gonna find out about me? There's nothing that I care to keep secret or hidden. You know, everything I could put my whole life out there. I care less because I have nothing to be ashamed of now. You see, I walk with my head up. You know.
And putting, I started sharing, you know, with people that were close to me, but to go out there now on social media, have a public account, putting my secret, and I'm doing quotation marks, my secret out there, it took away the pain. It took away the power. Because guess what? I'm the author, I'm the narrator of my story, and I get to write how it ends. The outside world does not get to write my story. I do. And it's amazing.
You know, I will put money up to any one of the people that I know in recovery on social media, you know, and we're strictly talking about Instagram. It's the only social media I'm on. I'm not on Facebook or anything else. I would bet my paycheck that I would not get more than maybe a handful, if that, of people that actually went on one of these recovery pages and said something bad to someone, like, oh, you're just a drug addict, you're just an alcoholic, you're just a loser. Because most people look at the page, and some people that don't even follow me will like my stuff, and you can tell, like, they want, sometimes they reach out and they're like, you know what, I kind of want a piece of what you got, but I'm not ready. And that's okay. You'll be ready when you're ready. But I never had anyone come on and say, you know, this sobriety thing's not what it's cracked up to be, or recovery, or, you know, God forbid I get my head out of my ass, or my kids love me again, or I save my marriage. No one ever says that, you know, like, oh, you're just a loser. No. Most people are like, wow, you really turn things around. And it's not, you didn't turn things around where you were successful out in the world materialistically. You turn things around in your head and you perceive things differently. Your wealth comes from the feeling that you have inside that everything's going to be all right, and maybe the future isn't just all doom and gloom, and you feel like you deserve respect and you respect others and try and help others.
Yeah, and learning to shift your mindset. I know it sounds cliche, because I, you know, when I was first seeking recovery, all I cared about was not feeling the brutal withdrawal symptoms. When they would talk about meditation and mindset, I was just like, shut the F up, just give me my medicine so I don't withdraw. Like, it just sounded like so cliche to me, and it's the thing that saved my life. I mean, now knowing how to change my mindset when anxiety takes over and I start self-talk and reassuring myself and telling myself positive affirmations, it's magical. Oh my, it's magical. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my God, this is magic. This is the magic pill. This is the magic medication. It's not drugs. It's, I mean, I'm smiling from ear to ear. It's to shift my mindset in a matter of, sometimes it takes 5 minutes, sometimes it can take 20 minutes. I've also learned to give myself grace. I don't have to jump right back up. I struggled with perfectionism most of my life because I felt, well, if my dad didn't want me, then I'm going to have to be perfect. You know, my daughter's dad, he cheated on me. My high school boyfriend, he cheated on me. So I never felt like I was enough. I'm not enough. And the perfectionism also fed, it was a trigger of my addiction. And to now love myself and to get that internal validation from within and from God, no one can ever, ever, like, no one can ever take my recovery away from me, no matter what. And that's the best gift that I could have not only given myself, but my family, my kids, my granddaughter. And I'm so grateful to have come across people like you, the community of people that I have met because of my journey. I've met so many wonderful people. And like you said, so many positive comments. It was the opposite reaction. Instead of people judging me, when I first put my story out there, the inflow of love and messages from people that were either struggling with their own addictions, or even if they've never gone through, the way that they viewed me. And if, like I said, I don't use external validation, but we're all human. We all care in some sort of aspect what people think. I just no longer let it define me or validate me as a human being.
Exactly. You shouldn't let it define you, because if anything, it would be in a positive light anyway, because you're doing something to make a difference. Yeah. How many people do you know that you can ask that are in recovery that actually help people on a daily basis? I would think you'd struggle to find one, maybe one person in your life. Cause I know that that's the same way with, and I'm not talking about people in recovery, cause most of the people I have in my circle are in recovery and do help, but people that aren't in recovery, of those people that you know, how much of them makes a positive difference? How many of them make a positive difference on even a weekly basis? They go out of their way and they give someone their free time, or they donate. And it's, we are in a very precious few, you know, a minority, a percentage of people that have a program that not only make themselves better, but then go out and share what they learn with the rest of the world and help people. And I don't ask for anything back, because you know what I receive back is greater from helping people than any, you know, monetary or anything materialistic that I could receive back. It's respect. Like, thanks for helping. I'm like, that's what it's about. I helped you because someone helped me, because I was you and I am you. And some days I'm worse than you. And some days I feel like shit. And some days I feel like I'm on top of the world, but that's okay, because as long as I don't drink or use, I'm going to be fine. And I can help someone else, you know, and that's what it's all about. And that's what you're doing now. That's what you're doing right now on this show. And with your page, is you're getting out of yourself and you're rising above your own, maybe hold what's holding you back from speaking or from coming out and helping others. You're rising above that, and you are, you know, skyrocketing into that other dimension they talk about. You know what I mean? It sounds like very, you know, sci-fi, but helping people on a regular basis is not something that most normal people do, because they're so self-absorbed. So it's a program that's selfish in one aspect and very not selfish.
Oh my God, yes. And I thought that opiates were my magic pill, but helping people, that natural high, man, I never thought that anything can make me feel as good as the pain pills, but I'm on cloud nine right now. I channeled my pain into my purpose. And you know, even getting on Instagram and I love music, I love to dance. I mean, never in a million years would I ever posted myself, you know, dancing like having fun. I dance like nobody's watching. That's one of my favorite sayings. You dance like nobody's watching. And the old me, you know, 2-3 years ago, I could have never imagined being so vulnerable to the world. And I also want people to see that the side of me, because this isn't easy for me. I'm human. It's scary. I have good days. I have bad days. But I make a choice every single day to do something to help others. And in return, it helps me. And I will continue to do it.
I'm the same way. When I feel overjoyed, I'll sing in the shower, usually in the car. Don't tell anyone. But I'm not a big dancer. I was when I was younger in clubs, but I was inebriated. So I don't even know if it's called dancing or having a seizure.
Hey, so as long as you're having fun, that's all that matters.
Yeah, well, that's what got me in trouble in the first place. Don't say that. Listen, you have on your bio on your Instagram, you know, breaking free and helping women. You get contacted a lot, or is it once in a while, or just you put it out there in case? Because there will be people who contact you, I'm sure. You know, once you put it out there and get on the podcast circuit, people are going to start jumping on, and you're going to really.
And that's what I'm looking for. I recently just put my page out on Instagram in August, and I'm actually going to be launching a website hopefully here in the next week or so. And I really want to work with women. I want to offer an anonymous tool, because I was so, so freaking ashamed to let anybody know, even my husband, my twin sister. And I have a chat box where people can actually ask me questions anonymously if they're not ready. And I get that. I needed that when I was in my darkest moment. So, you know, there's so many different phases to recovery, and I want to help at any phase possible. And I really hope that people do hear the authenticity in my voice, and they come to me, and I want to be their guide. I want them to know they're not alone, and you cannot do this alone. You can't. I tried it. You can't.
No, you can't. I mean, there is those stories though, people that rely on their higher power, but you know, those are, I don't know if they're fairy tales or if anyone knows anyone who actually did it by themselves, but obviously they haven't, because there's stories out there. So that means they have told someone, which actually helps, you know. But this is a we program. This is a societal thing. You know, we almost have our own little mini community. Like I said, we help each other and we try and branch out. But sometimes people don't want it. And then there's some that I know personally that are at the bottom, and they're just bouncing off the bottom, and then they feel better and they stop calling you, or they stop, you know, doing what they're supposed to be doing. And those are the ones that you're close to, maybe perhaps people you grew up with or people you know from work or even family members. And that's what really is challenging, is watching people, because sometimes you see people or you hear people, you hear about others, or you see them online. I see constantly Instagram people drop off, you know, and it's rough because the coronavirus is really, really taking its toll mentally, and a lot of people are going out from it. So, but to see someone on a daily basis, someone that you know personally, it sucks, but that's the nature of the beast. And you have firsthand knowledge of both sides of the coin. You've been in hell and now you are trying to get into heaven, and it's really a daily reprieve. You know, it's like, tomorrow's not guaranteed, you know, and today is what you need to worry about. Just don't do it. You will make, I've thought about it plenty of times, how bad it would be if I just even took like one drink. Because yeah, I might not get drunk today, but my whole structure will come crashing down. All I've built up and all I ask from God on a daily basis will come crashing down, because I'll take my will back. That's what it is. It's not the drink or the Percocet or the sleeping pill in the middle of the daytime to be out of my gourd. It's the fact that I took my will back in that regard, which I promised myself I wouldn't do. You know, you shouldn't make promises, but if you make them to yourself, you know, it's...
Yeah, and you have to live with that. And like you said, it's not the amount of alcohol or pills. It's the fact, it's the act. It's the act of doing something that, you know, is detrimental. And going back to what you were saying earlier, there's no me in recovery. It's we. You know, it almost took my life, because I thought, oh, I'm strong-minded, I'm determined. If I set my mind to something, I always reach that goal somehow. So every time I'd relapse, oh no, I'll just take it, I'm fine, I'll do no. And I had to finally come to the place that I had to go out and get professional help. I spent, you know, thousands of dollars on recovery, and I would spend it all over again. It was the best gift that I could have given myself. And you know, I had to do something. I had to do my part. So many people are suffering right now with COVID, and I'm so blessed to still have a job. And I had to do my part and at least offer my story of hope. Just hope. Hope is all you need. Once you lose hope, you just hang on to that hope and never give up. You fight that fight. You stand back up. You give yourself grace. You love yourself, and you keep moving forward.
You know, I was gonna ask you for some kind of closing statement to tell people, you know, that there is a tomorrow if they want it, and you just pretty much put it perfectly. I don't think I could ask
that. That came from the heart. And you know, another thing, you know, don't ever compare yourself. Everybody's recovery is so different. And when I was at the clinic, they'd always tell us, don't compare your dose of medicine. Don't compare. Like, our bodies are different. Whatever route you take, you find what feeds your soul. Music and exercises for me, that may not be for someone. You find what feeds your soul, and you go for it, and you let that fill your soul.
Yeah, music for me is huge. It's probably the second most out of, or third actually, prayer and working out. But music is
right. I was just gonna say music and working out. I mean, that's like the highlight of my day.
Yeah. I need music. I like classical because it brings emotions. You know, it helps me. I think it helps me overall with my like a healthy emotional spectrum. I think music can hit the highs and hit the lows and kind of helps your brain function instead of just being stale and stagnant. I think it helps.
It's medicine.
Me anyway, but then again, I'm an overthinker, you know. All right, Dominique, I really appreciate you coming on the show today, and this show is going right up, so it'll be ready in about 10 minutes on Apple and all your other favorite Spotify and Google podcasts, so look for that if you're listening. If not, I will put it up on my page, and you can feel free to do the same on yours. And
thank you.
I'll be in touch with you. But
thank you, Steve.
Really
I appreciate you so very much, and I thank you for what you're doing. Thank you so much.
Okay,
you too. Thank you.
Sunday afternoon.
Okay, bye-bye.